Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
All right, everybody. Yeah, I am your impromptu guest today, or host.
Yeah. Well, you're not the guest.
One of those words.
Work here, but yeah. Either way. I mean, words are tough.
They are.
Especially when you've been doing the things that you do on a regular basis. We won't get into that this early in the show, but Ross is still trying to get his situation in North Carolina figured out, his temporary spot there. And so, and I needed a break from his face anyways.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not the rest of him. It's just his face. It makes me want to punch it. I watched the new guy too many times, so I hate him.
Right. If he could just stand backwards and face you, that'd be great.
Or if he could just move, like, switch the front and back of his face.
Ooh.
So he could face me, but not, I don't have to see him.
If science could get on that, if there's a scientist in the chat right
Elon
now.
Elon Musk is on it right now. Yeah. So today we have a special guest, Aaron Pauly from the band of Mice and Men. If you're a metal fan, you'll know who that is.
Mm.
You look depressed, to be honest. I think there's something about not touring that's ruining everyone's lives. It's not just the fans who are missing out on the music. You guys just don't have anything to live for right now.
You know what? I'll tell you, it's not that. I am in the middle of moving. I just moved into a new unit in my complex. So the move went like this, right? Movers show up 2 hours late. The key breaks off in the truck.
Oh, shit.
once we load the truck up, moving it to the new unit, I'd been in the new unit 30 minutes before. I open the front door because we're going to bring the boxes in, and it's flooded.
Ooh, good Lord. Exactly so how then, you want to see your new place.
So then the next day, yeah, and you know what? Like, the whole time I'm just like, you know what? PM it. This too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next day I stepped like barefoot on like half a broken glass that's in a trash bag and cut a sizable chunk out of my heel. It's been a chaotic last 3 days, but I'll tell you, I'm kind of enjoying it. Is that weird? Like, is it weird that after like 9 months of a very sort of banal existence, it's just like nice to
It's not weird at all. It's like when you've been single for a while and you date a crazy woman just
to make you feel alive.
Yeah. What's that? What is that song? I make myself bleed just so I can see color or some shit like that. I can't remember the name of that song.
Something about True Colors.
Maybe. I don't remember. Anyways. I understand that completely. I love chaos. And it's because I thrive in it. You know, everybody searches for that dopamine hit. And when everybody else is panicking around you and you feel at home, that's a very powerful feeling. And it makes your body produce a lot of dopamine. It becomes addictive.
For sure.
So I like it. It's like being on stage for you, I would imagine. I mean, not a lot of people can get on stage in front of thousands of people and perform with all the anxiety of fucking up, remembering the songs and all this other stuff. People don't understand what goes into live performances like that. Like, we get on stage and just say whatever the fuck. That's easy. He does stand-up comedy. That's a little bit more tough because you've got a, there's a rhythm and a cadence to it. You got to remember your joke points and all that stuff. For me, I just do whatever. But for you guys, you're like literally performing on stage. When something goes wrong, it's very obvious that it's you that made it go wrong. You know what I mean? Or at least that's the presumption.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, to do that successfully, I imagine it's no different feeling than an athlete or something that's performing at a high level, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of practice goes into it. And then when I step on stage, I kind of, it's really funny. It's almost like I kind of shut myself off and like just go out and do what I've practiced for and trained for, you know, and it kind, you kind of like, for me, it's just kind of a disconnect, you know, but it's actually easier for me to perform in front of thousands of people than to perform in front of like 10.
I've heard that. Yeah. Dan, so,
because you can hear smaller crowds talking shit.
That's so one of my good friends is Danny Warstop from Asking Alexandria. He actually said the same thing. He was like, I would rather be in front at like a festival than be in like a bar in front of 30 people, because every single one of their eyeballs is on you, and you can also look out and see all their eyeballs. It's like, all right, quit fucking staring at me, motherfuckers.
I think every musician would rather play in front of thousands of people than 30 people.
Well, for a number of reasons.
Yeah. For obvious reasons. Yeah. But
they kind of get lost in the crowd.
Yeah. When we play live, I don't have, like, we all wear in-ears. Mm-hmm. I don't have crowd mics, because every time we've ever tried to use them, there's always somebody in the front row that's like, I just get a fucking haircut. And I'm like, I can hear you. I'm like turned around, like drinking water, and I can hear the person who's right in front of the microphone.
Yeah, there's two shotguns on the corner.
That's just actually talking shit. Or they're like, hey, we should go. Let's go check out that other band. I'm just turned it off. So now when I perform, it's just selfishly just for me.
That's actually really funny, though. To be honest, like I wouldn't be able to keep it as I enjoy being shit talked. It's one of my. Like, my co-host who's not here today, Ross, doesn't ever read the comments anywhere on social media or any of our publishing platforms. But I read all of them because I'm looking for that special one. I'm looking for that I'm looking for that person that's calling me a giant cunt in such a creative way that I'm like, man, that's funny. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah, you're looking for the one to send to the group chat.
Yes.
Like, look.
Yes.
This is real.
That's my favorite thing. So I think if I was up on stage doing a show, a live show or something, and somebody said something – and I had in-ears in, and somebody said something truly fucked up, I would have to stop the show. I'd be like, you got to come up on stage and say what you just said, because you need to share this with everyone.
Yeah, I've never heard anything that was like super bad, but I've definitely heard people talking specifically about me not knowing that I can hear them, and then I immediately turn around and just like lock eyes, and it's just such a moment. But then you just gotta laugh about it. It's like, the only time that sucks is if you know you're blowing it. Like if you're sick or something and you're like, man, this show isn't, it's not going as well as I'd like it to. And then someone's talking, you're just like, like wounds you a little bit.
You can hear the energy leave the room. Like you can hear how dead it is out there.
It is probably not the best. Although, you know, in the podcast world and long form live show, even if you're fucking up, it's still kind of funny, or at least entertaining, maybe not funny. So I think this is a no fail kind of situation, unless you say some truly dumb or offensive things, right?
Yeah.
Not that I don't say offensive shit all the time, but there's lines, right? Like for years I've said Estelle Getty was involved in 9/11. I have no proof. But
you know it in your heart.
It's in there. My heart, I'm told. There's no evidence of that, but I'm told it's there, right? Like, I can feel it beating. I guess that's evidence.
Yeah, I mean.
Estelle Getty's involved in 9/11.
Do we ever want to talk about music?
Yeah, actually, you know, we just did a thing recently. I don't think it's been published yet, right?
No, it's uploaded, though.
Is it? Is it? Yeah. So we did a thing recently where I saved my playlist from when I was in war back in 2007 and 8. And we just did a show where we played all the songs, and I just told stories about that shit. Our fans love me. Everybody loves music, but our fans especially love music. I think there's something about it that it's almost like the olfactory gland, where smell is the sense most closely related to memory and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something to be said about music, though, in the way that it like everybody, when you're remembering a moment from your teen years, especially and on, I don't, maybe not preteen or childhood, but teen years and on for sure. When you're remembering big moments in your life, I think there's probably some kind of music associated with it or another, right? Whether it's something that you listen to during the event, or something you listen to after, either to celebrate or to mourn a loss or like a breakup or some shit like that, plays a big role in our lives. And I wonder if it's like that, because I'm not a musician. I mean, I can play some stuff, but I'm not a musician. I wonder if it's like that for you guys as well. I mean, are there memories? 100%. Like, who did you listen to when you were growing up? Because you lived in Northern California in Vacaville, which is just a little bit east of Oakland. And
yeah, that's where Papa Roach is from.
Yeah, Papa Roach is from there, but also like E-40 and shit. There's a ton of musicians from from the Bay Area in general. So who did you grow up listening to? Who are your inspirations?
You know, my mom grew up in San Francisco, so there was a lot of funk and like Motown on that side. And then my dad grew up kind of all around California, and he listened to a lot of kind of more singer-songwriter stuff, like Jim Croce, Simon and Garfunkel, Cat Stevens. So it, like, music was always really important in my household. And so going back to what you were saying about how there's always songs that remind you of certain things, you know, not to bring up like this horrible, super cringy cliche, but I got to do it. You know, when people are like, my life's a movie, you know, like in some sense, if you think of your life like that, then the music that you listen to that impacts you, that is the soundtrack to your life.
Right.
You know? And there are certain songs that will always bring you back to certain scenes in movies because it's the soundtrack. And I think,
right. Whenever I hear "Hip to Be Square," I'm thinking of, or any song by that band, I'm thinking of fucking Patrick Bateman laying into somebody's skull with a goddamn axe. You know what I mean? Like you can't play that song. It wasn't "Hip to Be Square." What was the song they were playing then during "American Psycho"?
Oh, where he's just bashing it in.
Was it "Hip to Be Square"? Are you sure?
I can't remember.
I don't remember. It's one of the hits from that same album. But anyways, I mean, that's a fucked up example, but you could definitely, it is "Hip to Be Square." You could definitely track that back. I feel like there are certain songs you hear. Like if anybody that's in our general age group, anybody in their 30s and early 40s would hear any of the songs, most of which were kind of indie songs that were in the movie Boondock Saints. And as soon as you hear that song, the scene pops up in your head.
Well, that's what art's supposed to do, right? It's supposed to encapsulate a feeling or a moment better than just like talking about it can.
Right. So
it's supposed to like take you there.
So tell me about the name of the band. I mean, you it started as Jamie's Elsewhere, right?
Yeah, you came in the band later.
No, that was actually an old band that I was in.
I see. So this is you're the only person that was in that. It wasn't multiple members that came over from that band.
No, it was just me.
Okay, cool. So tell me about of Mice and Men then. So because obviously that's everybody gets that reference. You know what I mean? Lenny's squishing rabbits and stuff. But what does it mean to you?
Well, so it actually, you know, along with being a very famous novel that they, you know, named after our band.
John Steinbeck might predate you a little bit. I'm not
sure. Yeah. Well, that's up for debate, actually. That's kind of like the whole Estelle Getty thing. You know?
That's true.
It's not real proof. But, you know, it actually comes from the Robert Burns quote, which is the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
Right.
Which is, I don't know of a more apropos statement for just life in general, let alone the last year we've had.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, so,
it's never what you prepare for.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to resilience. I think if you sort of can frame your life and your perspective that way, just knowing that like the best plans you're ever going to make, and you're going to line, you know, make sure all your ducks are in a row, and it's like shit's still going to go wrong. I think if you always remember that, you can set your expectations accordingly and live a pretty happy life, you know.
Right. I mean, there it goes. There's something in this connection that's kind of dicked up. Anyways.
I also see that you guys are green now. I can't see you anymore. You're just a big old giant.
Oh, man. What?
Square.
Well, hopefully, let me check YouTube, make sure YouTube's good. We're fine there. Yeah. So did you, like, you brought up there's always music in your house growing up, which I think is super awesome. What was the first instrument you played? Because I see you're bassist and vocalist now. Did you grow up playing bass, or did you grow up playing guitar?
My first instrument I ever learned was drums, actually.
Okay,
that's actually
banging on stuff.
That's something
I always did that as a kid, just banging on stuff. And then when I was in third grade, my school offered you could either do PE, like an extra PE class, or you can do band. And it's like, okay, cool. I want to do band. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And then so I was like, I want to play drums. And of course, you think like, as a third grader, you're going to get like this drum set.
No, you get a single snare. You get one
snare.
Yeah,
and I just got a little, and I got a little snare.
it's better than the woodblock.
Yeah, and so then, you know, and I was like, I think I was 8 years old. And then at the same time, like, because you, of course, the movie Three Ninjas, I think like impacted everybody's life that's like around our age.
Of course.
And so I was like, I gotta do Taekwondo. So when I was a little kid, I was doing Taekwondo too. And my parents said, if you get to black belt, we'll get you a guitar.
Ooh.
And so then when I was 10, I got my black belt and I got a guitar.
Nice.
And so then I was just
what was that first guitar?
It was a guitar called a Gremlin.
Oh.
And it was like, it's gotta be some like Chinese import company that I don't even think exists anymore. And it was like, because that music store sold like brands that weren't really brands.
Right.
They sold brands that I've never ever seen outside of.
So it was wish.com before the internet existed, basically.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Oh, man. What kind of body style was it? Was it acoustic or electric?
It was electric. It was like a black sort of Strat style, but without a pickguard.
Oh, I found it. I found
dual
it.
Humbucker.
Yeah, it looks like almost like an Ibanez. It had the dual humbucker in the back. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this was, of course you're going to play metal after getting this guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I remember at the same, you know, and then I remember shortly after my dad bought a Sunburst Fender Strat.
Oh, nice. Wait, he got it for himself or for you?
Well, for himself.
So he got you a Gremlin and he bought himself a Sunburst Strat.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah. Well, at the same time, it's like I didn't know any better. And I got to pick my own guitar. And of course, I picked the Gremlin. Wow. I don't remember why. Probably because it was the first one I saw.
Or it looked cool. I mean, look, if it looks cool, like a lot of people bought Deans back in the day just because they look cool.
Yeah. I mean, people still buy Ibanez because they look cool.
Yeah.
The BC Rich Warlock guitars.
With the EMGs in it.
Yeah.
Oh, so hard.
The kind where
you could like, you could accidentally kill your bandmate on stage with.
Yeah, seriously, if you run around too much on stage, the pointy ends might catch somebody. Yeah, you got to be careful with that shit.
Decapitate a fan.
Speaking of guitarists, we've got Jason Rao from Breaking Benjamin in the YouTube chat right now.
Oh, what up, Jason? Shit.
He's probably about half a bottle of tea.
Hell yeah, shout out to Breaking Ben.
Yeah, fucking, they love you guys. So I think...
love them.
As someone who grew up, like I grew up playing... piano and a little bit of guitar when I was younger, and I kind of just got into it later. But I think guitar and drums are actually the instruments that parents who think their kids have musical talent need to get them into, because using your two hands independently at that young age, learning how to play music is so fucking important. It's so hard to learn that when you get older. But learn, especially with drums, you're using maybe all four limbs independently at some time, right? And learning how to use them all at the same time. And that transfers into so many other, like my buddy Matt is one of the best musicians I've ever seen. He's an insurance adjuster, but he can literally pick up an instrument and learn it in 2 minutes, because the first thing he did when he was like 6 years old was learn how to play drums. And by the time he was in high school, he was playing on like a fucking Neil Peart style 90-piece set. You know what I mean?
I've never seen someone be able to handle two women at once that didn't play drums.
Tommy Lee is a good example of that, I guess. I was trying to think
the best
of,
at it.
I was trying to think of the reverse, but I only thought of the affirmation.
Exactly.
Of your fucking,
drummers are always, they're always pulling it. You
fucking ruin me. Jason Rao says he loves you guys, so that's good. He's got super pink hair.
He does. Right, he does.
He actually got it repinked recently.
I told him I was going to go pink too in honor of him.
Oh, you should. Yeah.
I need to do that very soon. So you guys were in the heyday of Warped Tour. So this was like you guys toured between 2011 and 2014. You guys were at Warped Tour, right? All four of those years in a row. Like, so that's right after I came out of high school. I was at there 2004 to 2009. Mm-hmm. I was at every single Warped Tour I could. What's it like? Like, obviously it's over now, RIP, but like that was at the pinnacle. You guys at the zenith of that at that point in time. What was it like being in one of the best traveling festivals in the world?
It was super sick because it felt like traveling summer camp. Because it's like everybody's in their rigs and everybody shows up the next day. Everyone's shitting in the same plastic porta potties. which is like, that's like the thing about Warped Tour that I always like remind people, I'm like, no matter how glamorous you think like any of the headliners were, everyone was Dugan and Portage.
They didn't have the trailers.
And not only
with the water
that, but everyone had the same fear of getting forklifted, and it happened to me.
Oh shit! All right, let's hear that.
Yeah, it's exactly as terrifying as you think it is.
Go ahead and tell us about that, because I'm not.
Some of our audience members might not know what forklifting is.
Yeah, we can't. Yeah,
so it's early in the morning. And there's just pristine plastic. And you just know based on the look of it whether or not it's brand spanking new and ready to go, or if it's been ran through the day before, you know, because maybe it's like the second or third day of a festival.
That water's blue right now.
This was like pristine. It looked like they had just cut the locks off of it. It was in a row of other porta potties. And I was like, all right, sick. I know better. Like, I don't want to get forklifted. So I'm not going to pick the ones on the edges,
right?
Because those are most likely going to be the first to go. But these were already up against some chain link, and they looked like they weren't going to move, right? So mm-hmm. I picked, I don't know, one like two or three in. So I'm sitting there, and then I start hearing a beep from like kind of far away. It's just beep, beep, beep. And it's like, you can't see what's going on, right? But my mind's racing. So I felt like in my mind, I felt like I had left my body. And I was like outside staring down at my own porta potty, and I could just like, it could have been a million things. It could have been a truck that was like getting ready to drop the stage or a bus backing up. But I knew like in my heart that I was about to get forklifted.
Yeah.
So was this, so someone was out spotting and waiting for you to go take this fresh morning dump. One of your bandmates.
Yeah, because I wasn't lingering, right?
No, like, and this was particular your porta potty too. Like, this wasn't one of the outsides. They weren't moving these to like another area of the festival.
It was very well. No, so that's what I okay. So you know when they say when you assume right. you make an ass out of you and me, I just made an ass out of me and me because they were definitely moving those. And although I picked one nice in the middle, mine was the first to go. He's like, I'm going to start here and work my way out, I guess.
Now, I've been
and, so he picked me up about 3 or 4 feet in the air. And I'm pounding on the door. If you can't hear me. No. And he moves me about, I don't know, like 15, 20 feet and sets me down. And by that point, I pulled up my pants. I was like, and I just burst through the door. And he looked like Santa. He looked like Santa Claus.
Of course.
Like this guy looked like Santa Claus, but he looked like Santa Claus had like lost the toy factory in Vegas. Like,
yeah.
And I just remember he just gave me this look like, don't hate the player, hate the game. And there was just this like mutual respect of like, thanks for not dropping me, man.
Yeah, you were covered in.
You're a good forklift operator. And that's where my mind went. I was like, this guy's been forklifting a long time.
Yeah.
He's probably like, he's lifted up his fair share of people in there on accident.
I mean, being a good forklift operator is a big deal.
After all, I was in good hands. Yeah.
Well, look.
And this was at like 7 a.m.
You'd think the forklift isn't that far away from, like, if you're driving it, if they're picking it up from the front, I think you'd be able to see that little red bar that's when the door is locked. Mm-hmm. You probably should probably take a look at that. If you're out there and you're a forklift operator, make sure you take a look at that thing. For one of two reasons. One, to make sure you're not picking up somebody on accident. But two, to make sure that if you are picking somebody up on purpose, you're getting the right one. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Attention to detail is really important. If you're going to fuck somebody up, make sure you're fucking up the right person, because you don't have to explain to some 12 to 15-year-old's parents who's there at the festival, oh, I just rocked your kid with a bunch of fucking Duke and blue water because I thought it was my buddy. You don't want to have to have that conversation. You know what I mean?
Ooh, that's real bad.
Yeah, because I've rocked kids in public before on accident. I'm like, oh, sorry, man. I thought that was my...
The statute of limitations on that is still out, Dan.
7 years. Yeah, it's 7 years for assault.
On a child?
On any person. Unless it's attempted murder, yeah. You're all set.
Good to know.
It's been 7 years, right?
Is a forklift attempted murder?
I mean, if you try to drive the tines from a forklift through somebody's body, I'm pretty sure impalement is... attempted murder. I don't know how your body works, but mine, when it gets impaled, bleeds the fuck
out. You
know,
I'm just asking these questions, and you know, I'm glad you're hearing
it. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. And I'm not an attorney either, so maybe ask somebody else.
So did you guys start, like I know some of those bands, like, don't even get paid to be there. Like, you basically just get to get on the tour, maybe even pay them money, and then you get to sell some merch. So, like, were you guys already established when you first started getting booked, or did you start as one of the early bands and then finally move your way up to, like, the headlining spots where you actually get pyro or some sort of CO2?
The band definitely did. I joined the band in 2012. And the first tour I ever did with the band was Warped 2012 on Main Stage.
Okay,
so the band, right, the band from 2009 through 2012 was grinding like something in the realm of like 250 to 275 shows a year, you know? So yeah, like busting ass. So by the time I joined, the band was pretty established. But even from 2012 to now, you kind of continuously work your way up through the ranks of like festivals and things like that. And it's, you know, it's very little. What's funny is it's very little to do with like the politics of it, like moving up through the hierarchy of it. And it's just more about just, can you get on stage and just rip?
Cause everyone's
can you
there.
Just rip it? Can you just get on stage and rip a gig? Are you reliable? You know?
Well, that's a big deal with Warped Tour, especially the metal / hardcore industry in general. A lot of guys aren't the most reliable, quote unquote.
I mean, being in a band is hard because it's just you have other people and everyone's got other shit going on. And then you have a full crew because there's tons of gear. Mm-hmm. And some days you just wake up and you're like, damn, like I should have just, what if I was a virtuoso like violin player? Mm-hmm. I could just drive my own car and just like, oh, here's my gig. It's just because I'm sick. It's not because I have all this extra shit to impress you with.
Showing up in your suit and everything.
Oh,
dude, concertina. Yeah.
Do you guys ever think about like your alternative selves? Like if you would become a virtuoso at something?
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you had just dedicated your entire life up to this point at one thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was a virtuoso at murdering for a while.
Yeah, you did. You were pretty good at that. Yeah.
But I mean, I think about alternate realities a lot because I think we're in a simulation. I'm a big believer in the soap bubble theory, which is there's just an infinite amount of universes, right? Parallel is not the right word. I would say adjacent is probably a better word.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the case, if there is an infinite amount of universes, there's a universe in which you exist in every possible way. Like there's anything you can possibly imagine. It's like rule 34 on the internet for porn, right?
Right.
Anything you can imagine, it exists out there. So, I mean, I've imagined myself as like, I don't know, Estelle Getty being involved in 9/11. And that's why I came up with that theory in the first place, because I was imagining that, right?
See, I imagine you like raising ponies, miniature ponies?
No, many horses maybe.
Okay. Is there a difference?
Like little Sebastian from Parks and Rec, but yes. not ponies. Ponies, I think, are overrated. Many horses, that's where it's at. But yeah, I mean, everybody thinks about that. It's that's the quintessential thing in entertainment, though. Everybody, every male actor wants to be a rock star, and every fucking rock star wants to be an actor. You know what I mean? Or every sports person wants to be an actor or a musician or something like that. Everybody imagines themselves in one of those other capacities, right?
Well, they see how glamorous it is, because I mean, grass is always greener on the other side. So you're like, I love what I have, but that looks even better, so I want to go get that.
Yeah. People should stop worrying so much about grass, though.
Yeah, it's really unnecessary.
Yeah. Grow up and do coke like an adult.
I'm a big fan of xeriscaping, you know, some nice rock work.
Xeriscaping, what the fuck does that mean?
It's like groundscaping, but without grass. It's like rocks and stuff.
Southwestern style.
Yeah, it's a yard of rocks.
I see. I don't know why that's even a thing.
I don't either. I'm hipsters.
Yeah. Where do you live now?
Huntington Beach, California.
Oh, shit. So you're right in the thick of all this bullshit then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the thick of my apartment where I've been. I guess I've been social distancing for like 6 or 7 years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like I tend to just like my couch and my computer where I make music. They're kind of like my two happy places, and I don't really need much outside.
Except for your Boston Terrier. I've got two Boston Terriers of my own. I saw that on your Instagram. Yeah, I've got two little ones. Well, they're not. One of them's little. Oh, there we go.
Oh, what a cutie.
Look at that fucking...
What's their name?
Daisy's going to be in the rest of the interview, if that's cool.
Good, What's up, Daisy?
Yeah, we love... I've got two Boston Terriers myself, and honestly, I'm kind of the same. I spend most of my free time at home alone, writing, smoking weed, and hanging out with my dogs. That's pretty much all I do, actually.
That's what's up. That's life.
It's a fucking great life, actually. People are like, why are you so anti-social? I'm not antisocial. I'm pro-me.
Right.
Right? I'm not anti you. I'm pro me.
You just like doing whatever you're doing more than whatever anyone else is doing.
Correct. Yeah. I'm like, if you come up with some kind of plan or person that's going to be better than me being at home smoking weed with my dogs, then I'll fucking do it. 100% of the time I'll do that thing. But good fucking luck beating two Boston Terriers that wrestle and are stupid looking as fuck and funny, and I'm high as shit the whole time. Like, it's basically like free UFC, right? Except for I have to feed those assholes.
And they're animals.
Well, yeah.
I guess humans are animals, too.
Some of them, yeah. Some of them.
So you joined the band, like, when they were already a headlining act. So did they reach out for you as a vocalist and a bass player together? Because I know they were trying to fill two spots. So, like, you were just the perfect guy?
Yeah, well, so at the time, they had a guy named Joel Piper who was filling in for them. And I was still in Jamie's Elsewhere. This was kind of, I think, spring 2012. We ended up playing a show in Bakersfield, and I'd known all the guys because, like, I'd known Phil from when he was in A Static Lullaby.
Right.
And I'd known Tino from when he was in Lower Definition. So I was talking with Tino because Joel told me that he wasn't going to continue on filling in, and he was going to kind of focus on his own, like, solo career. So he was like, hey, you should just talk to Tino. So, and I was already, like, doing my own thing, and I said it kind of half jokingly. I was like, yo, if you need somebody to, like, sit under the stage and, like, sing the clean vocal parts, like, I'll do it, you know? And then Tino asked, he goes, hey, but in all seriousness, do you play bass? And I'd never played bass in a band before, but I played guitar. Mm-hmm. And, like, for metalcore, a lot of music, it's like, bass is treated like it's the first four strings of a guitar. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I can just, yeah, it translates. And so then the rest was history. I think I played one show the first show I played back with them was in Bakersfield after that Bakersfield show. And then the second show I played with them was the first day of Warped Tour 2012.
Dude, fuck yeah. I mean, Central California loves their metal.
Oh, man. And it's you know,
Tulare County.
There's certain places where there's not much else. Uh-uh. And you think about, like, what music means to somebody that doesn't have a lot outside of that. And it's like, those are some of the craziest places to play.
Fresno.
Visalia. I threw so many bows in Visalia at, like, Kmart parking lots and girl jeans.
Oh, dude. So many spin kicks.
Oh, yes.
So many spin kicks thrown in Central California.
Have you been to Fresno before?
Yeah, plenty of times. Like, my aunt and uncle lived there.
I mean, god damn, dude. People have this idea of California, and I just invite you to go to Fresno and then challenge your ideas about what California is and how it compares to, say, Alabama, for example.
It's exactly the same.
Man, that place is rough. And if you're from there, actually, Northern Brazil, of all places, I don't know if you've ever tracked on this, but Northern Brazil has a huge fucking metal fan base.
Yeah,
like, massive. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how it happened.
And it's very similar to the Central California metal band base, where all these guys are super jacked.
It's like
aren't wearing shirts.
Jack Latino dudes yes. that are just fucking wrecking people in the pit. I'm like, all right, I can get down with that.
With tight jorts.
Yeah, but the thing about a metal pit that looks extremely violent to some people is that I've very rarely seen somebody go down in a pit and not get helped up by other
people. That's the rule of the pit, right?
Yeah. I mean, but that's a rule that's never been written down anywhere. It's just like, that's the presumption. And I think that's something that here in America, especially right now, we could learn a little bit from that idea. Like, yeah, you can exercise your demons a little bit. You can do it alone or in a group, but you don't do it at the expense of other people.
Right.
Right. And if it incidentally hurts someone else, you fucking help them back up. That should be the fucking unwritten rule of all of life. And for some reason, all these people that society has deemed as fucking weirdos and dirtbags and whatever the fuck else are the only people that are fucking obeying that universal law.
Yeah, that sense of humanity.
Weird, right?
Yep. Yeah.
It's very bizarre to me. I mean, that's a thing that happens all the time. We talk about it on the show all the time and with our fan base. The biggest dirtbags that you know are probably the nicest people, the most helpful behind the scenes, the ones that are actually doing charity instead of bitching about shit on the internet.
Some sort of weird honor among thieves, in a way.
Maybe it's like that, or maybe it's just they've cut through all of the pretense and bullshit and actually give a fuck about humanity. You know what I mean? Who knows? We're not here to answer those questions. We're here to answer questions about metal today.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you said, you talked about your parents and their musical style, what you grew up with there. Who are your influences as a musician from the metal scene? Because, I mean, look, you came up in, you graduated high school, what, 2006?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was a pretty good established old and new metal by that time, right? So there's a lot of different shit going on. I mean, 2006, Lamb of God's at its height, but also on the softer or more eclectic side, Linkin Park's really hot with that style, and there's this touring is, I got to say, from the late 90s, and this could just be biased because I was around then, but touring from the late 90s through like the early 2010s is one of the best times for music of all time.
I mean, right? That was the best time for rock music, yeah, for sure. Or the second generation of rock music.
Post. So what concerts, I mean, Vacaville is, what, half an hour maybe from, if you get on BART from San Francisco. And I've seen, the last concert I went to there, and I think 2016, was Lamb of God and In Flames. You know what I mean? So it's not like they don't get good bands there. So what concerts were you going to growing up? Who did you like?
So growing up, like, Vacaville had a really big local music scene. Mm-hmm. You know, so like bands like Papa Roach, even before that, like, and this is like even, it even predates me, but like Deftones, kind of came out of SAC. There was always like a really big local music scene. So when I was in high school, there were probably three or four different bands that were like comprised of people from my high school. And like, you know, our local scene between Sacramento and San Francisco, and even then Sacramento and San Francisco were both considered two different scenes from like the Vacaville, Fairfield scene, Napa, Davis kind of thing. But when I was like a young kid, it was, you know, seeing bands like Papa Roach at the Three Oaks Community Center. And then, you know, yeah, like you talk about Lamb of God. And then in 2006, you also have like Under Oath's Define the Great Line.
Yeah, that was that.
Like a year before that. You had As Cities Burn, Son, I Loved You at Your Darkest. Like you had bands on Tooth and Nail that were killing it in Solid State.
Chiodos was massive at that point in time.
Bullet for My Valentine was big back then. There was
Circus Survive had come out. Seosin was big. Like,
there was all these different
flavors.
There
were just so many great bands that weren't necessarily metal, but that like had a really sort of heavy emotional content to it. Like to me, heavy is not like just like chugs and shit. Like I think it's heavy's not just sonics. Like sometimes you hear a song that doesn't even sonically sound heavy and it's crushing. It's just a crushing song. Like
Johnny Cash.
I think
people always talk about him being heavy.
Yeah, you know, and I think but it was really awesome growing up in Northern California in the early 2000s, you know, being in high school because there was so much music and it was there were a handful of venues to play. There was always some sort of fight that was going to happen at a hardcore show on the weekend. You know, it was a cool time to come up. And at the same time, it was there was a lot. Like I was blessed to live halfway between Sacramento and San Francisco, where you had amazing bands from the Bay Area and amazing bands from Sacramento. Well, it was... and venues to play that were within like 30 minutes from where you live. So you can actually like feel like you're doing something and like get out and express yourself. It's not just like, oh, my town has one venue and we can play there every weekend, but nobody wants to do that because nobody's going to show up. But it's like, we have tons of venues. So it was like, you could play a show 30 minutes away. You know what I mean? So
do a little mini Central California tour with like six or seven venues. Really easy.
Hit up like Roseville, Sacramento, Modesto, Fresno, Bakersfield. And it's things you'd never do when you're like, you know, touring it at a level that we tour at now. But it's like back then that was amazing.
Well, no one really
wasn't so much about, nothing was about the future of anything. Like nobody thought back in 2005 or 2006 that any of that was going to be around.
Right.
Longer than we were going to be around. You know what I mean? So
it was the most fun thing to do at the time.
That's where you get the best product of any kind, whether it's art, music, anything like that, is when people realize that there is only now. Like everything else is not real. It's either past.
Oh, well, look at Daft Punk. Yeah. Daft Punk has had a 3-decade-long career where they have made a huge impact in pop music in every decade of their career.
Right.
I mean,
they talk about in their documentary bringing the Four on the Floor beat, boom, to electronic music from disco.
I mean, people like Marshmello don't exist without them, which is a completely different genre, technically. I mean, that's a pretty interesting thing. So, and now they're retiring again.
They haven't put an album out in 8 years. Yeah. So it's like, you say 3 decades. It's really like 2.2. Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
And here's the thing is, it's like you take for granted artists like that. And then all of a sudden they announce their retirement and you're like, whoa, like nothing actually does last forever. That's like what our whole new EP was kind of about. That I think once you get to your 30s, you kind of start to realize that you start to lose friends and family members, and trends change and careers change and your life changes, and you realize, man, nothing does last forever. You have the here and now, and you should honor the past, and you shouldn't worry too much about the future. You know, best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
Yeah. Well, what did Eisenhower used to say? That a plan is useless, but planning is indispensable, right? So I guess in a way, you certainly have to be prepared for the future, but don't expect things to go like you planned them to go. That's ridiculous, right? How often does that happen? How often do you say, you know, I mean, there's a number of different ways, but one funny one is that how many times have you said, your friend's like, hey, let's go out and get a drink right quick, and then we'll go do something else, and then it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you blacked out somewhere. You know what I mean? I mean, that happens to me frequently, to be honest. Once I start boozing it up, it's just like, that's pretty much it. That's all I'm doing for the day.
Yeah.
I let people, somebody needs to make an app on your phone that detects your blood alcohol level, and once mine hits 0.08, that's it for me. Don't call or text me. Just get the fuck out of here. I'm not doing any more work. I'm not answering anything.
Just do not disturb after that.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
I think somebody, I remember reading, like, I swear it was like 10 years ago, somebody had invented an app. It was kind of like puzzle based. That they said within like reasonable certainty, by the time you're drunk, you're not going to be able to unlock your phone.
That's probably a good
idea.
And
I was like, I'm the kind of person that could download that to try it, and sober wouldn't be able to unlock my phone.
Well, then it becomes a game.
I got a million spinning plates going at all times.
There's also state dependent memory. So if you're trying all the time to get it right while you're drunk, and you learn it that way, then you're only going to remember it when you're drunk. Which is pretty fucking funny, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I'm high most of the time.
Also terrifying.
I think math is the way to go. It should be a math problem you have to solve. I think somebody did that in a movie or TV show one time. They tried to make a fucking an app that was you had to solve a complicated math problem to be able to unlock your phone after a certain time at night or some shit like that.
Something.
I don't remember. So basically, we all know what it's about. It's so you don't fucking drunk text your ex.
Right.
That tried to stab you.
I like that ex, though.
That's, yeah, I know, but you want to fucking be sober when you make that call.
Yo, but what happens? What happens if you're like,
because then I feel the stabbing.
You step on the broken glass, and while your foot's bleeding, you're like trying to solve the problem.
Yeah,
because you can't call 911.
Yeah,
and so what if I'm just sitting with my foot in the bathtub, just bleeding, just trying to unlock the phone, and it's, you know,
was this 3 days ago for you?
It's not like I'm going to get better at doing math.
Right,
the more blood I
use
out of my
foot. No, that's the
opposite. Hey boys, I gotta jump off because I gotta have a bunch of like radio, you know, stuff that's not gonna be nearly as fun or as Estelle Getty heavy.
All right, man.
Yeah, I appreciate everything.
Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for telling us the story about getting porta potty.
And hey, we have we're dropping a new EP at the end of this week. We're gonna be dropping two more. So
what's the name of it?
I'll come back and talk some more and visit you guys again once we've got some more stuff.
Yeah, what's the name of the EP and where can people find you on social? Where can they get your music?
So the EP is called Timeless. Mm-hmm. You can follow us on all the socials. I think it's OMANDM. So OMANDM. Mm-hmm. I think Facebook is Of Mice. We're like discombobulated.
Right.
I don't know. You can find us anywhere. Apple, Spotify.
Cool.
Deezer if you're overseas.
Fuck yeah. Well,
sweet. Sounds
go
good,
download, man. Stream it. I think everything's okay. Yeah. Dan, if you want to go ahead and take him out. We appreciate it, Aaron.
Thanks, man. We'll see you soon.
This has been a lot of fun, guys. Thank you. Can't wait to come back.
Yes, later. Sir. Let's
take it easy, guys.
Yeah, let's go ahead and exit him out and keep going.
Yeah, we'll jump into some sponsors here since we got a nice little.
I'm going to jump into this Long Branch.
Little break. Well, you've been in it the whole goddamn show.
Well, but, you know, need an excuse.
First, as usual, we got Ghostbed, ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. You've seen it in the studio. A lot of you have them at home. If you're in Texas, you may need a new one now because everything flooded. By the way, there was like, to illustrate some of the panic that happens after this dumb bullshit, there were news articles all over the place about how, watch out for flooding now that the snow is melting. Like, no, didn't happen. Anyways, ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Right now, they still got the President's Day special going on, which means you can get the bundle, the adjustable base, plus the mattress, 40% off of that bitch. And all these deals work with the 36-month pay-as-you-go plan. No interest on that. So 36 months, you spread out your payments and blah, blah, blah. I'm not wearing a black jacket. It's a fucking Black Rifle Coffee canvas hoodie with camo on it, you son of a bitch. Anyways.
It's matching, though.
It matches like what?
The hat.
Yeah, it does. The other deal is, and this is one that's always the case on GhostBed, is by the way, you get two free pillows with that bundle package. The other big deal is the one you guys are all familiar with. That's 30% off site wide at Drinking Bros, or at GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros, and it's they just take the thing we love about the company. The reason we still work with them is because they take care of the people that take care of us. So military and veteran, any first responder, EMT, fucking police, fire, whatever it is, nurses, teachers, government employees, whomever it is, forever, right? You always get that deal. And again, the 36-month pay-as-you-go program is something that I don't understand how they get away with doing it.
I have no idea.
Financially, it blows my mind that they get away with that.
We've got one of these in the office here, and I may or may not have slept on it while this winter wonderland was going on. It was the only nights I woke up without back pain. If you guys ever see me laying on the ground, constantly stretching out during these streams, it's probably because of the shitty mattress I have.
Yeah, I've heard that actually from a lot of people who said, I mean, the mattress, like even people that are like, my mattress at home feels this, like I like this or like this about it, but they're like, I will say this, I didn't have back pain. I'm like, well, isn't that kind of the point? Right. Asshole. Anyways, yeah, it's a great bed. Next up, we got Roman.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros. It is, it takes all the nonsense out of the process. So talking about ED, erectile dysfunction, isn't something that people are comfortable with. People don't have time to go to fucking doctors anymore, you know, and it's easy for men are like this. Maybe not the current whiny generation, but our generation and backward are not very, it's hard to get us to go to a doctor because we're busy. And also we're like, just rub a little dirt on it or whatever. But this is, you know, this is about your life, right? It's easy. So go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros, answer the questions. If you're approved for medication, and you'll be talking directly to a doctor who knows what's up. If you're approved for medication, then you get a healthcare professional will get you on the best treatment plan, free 2-day shipping. The whole process is super straightforward. It's simple and discreet. It comes in discreet packaging, so it's not like they don't send you a package that just has dick pills written on the front of it in bold letters or anything like that. Go to GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros, you get $15 off your first order. So that's GetRoman.com/DrinkingBros.
And I know a lot of you guys don't want to talk about ED, and sometimes ED isn't forever. Sometimes you just need a little Roman or a little something to give you over a rough patch, and then you're right back into it. Because a lot of it can be mental.
It's mental. Sometimes it's your diet, right?
So I mean, I've personally gone through it a few times in my life, and you know, a little pick-me-up here or there really saved the day.
Yeah, it helps. I mean, look, sometimes you need to drink and a little extra caffeine in the morning, and sometimes you need to take a little dick pill to get your fucking dick hard. It's just the way it is, man.
And sometimes you just want a party boner.
I don't understand why. Yeah, party boners are nice, too. So recreational use of this stuff, I don't think, is a problem. And again, there's nothing to be embarrassed about, man.
No.
It's like if you get a cold and you have a fever, nobody goes to Walgreens or whatever and buys cold medication and like hides their face while they're doing it, like they're buying Plan B. So what the fuck? What difference does it make? Don't be a dick.
Exactly.
Just take care of yourself, you bunch of assholes.
Be happy.
Next up, we have Killcliff CBD. I'm drinking the Flaming Joe right now. I actually brought in some of all the flavors for you assholes because you're always bitching about there not being any here. Well, I bought some. Look, fucking Fake Dan's not even waiting. He's walking over there right now.
He's like, I heard there was CBD here.
Fuck you. He's pretending to adjust the camera, but really he's going to grab a fucking CBD out of that box as soon as he comes over. I know your game.
He's been waiting on that Killcliff CBD for a while. I think he's going to change the sponsorship in his Instagram profile. He's going to say Killcliff sponsored.
Yeah. He's a Killcliff sponsor. So yeah, we've been with Killcliff for a while. You guys all know him. The CBD is 25 milligrams of CBD. It has zero sugar inside of it.
So it won't make you fat.
Got plenty of B vitamins and tastes great. There's four flavors now, right? So there's the orange kush, the grape, They call it the grapest of all time. Ross says cereal grapest. There's mango. Actually, there's five flavors now. There's mango, tango. Then there's
the tropical green
strawberry days, which is really good. And then there's this, the Flaming Joe, which is pineapple and jalapeno. It's very good. There's zero THC in this, and it will so you won't ever piss hot. And you know, it's great. So you go to killcliffcbd.com, use the promo code DrinkItBros, and you get a little discount there. And you can also use the discount on killcliff.com for their various energy drinks. And they don't, it's not just energy drinks. They have a pre, post, and our pre, during and then post workout kind of setup. That's how they sell their products. So a pre-workout with energy, a post-workout with some fucking stuff that you need to re-energize your body afterwards.
Hydration, and oxygen molecules.
Yeah, yep. And then a performance drink for while you're actually working out. So it's they cover all the bases. So whatever you're getting into, whether it's just trying to sleep at night and promote homeostasis, or if you're trying to, you know, get on a program to do work, either way it'll work. So
you really can't go wrong with it.
No, they have everything you need. So you guys with the music.
Is that all sponsors? Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
nice. You guys with the music, what did you guys think about Aaron Pauley? He seems like a nice guy.
He seems like a real cool guy. Seems like they had some music that he wanted to pitch, but he had way too much fun talking about drugs and alcohol.
We'll bring it back once the music's live, so you guys definitely go check it out if you're fans of that sort of stuff.
Saw a lot of Atreyu fans in the chat. A lot of
I can see that. Yeah. Atreyu, Bullet for My Valentine, probably. Anybody that's in their early to mid-30s is probably grew up on that shit, right?
I mean, it's just, it was the bees and knees then.
Yeah. It came around, this music came around at a time when radios would actually play harder music, right?
Yeah.
Because in the 90s, they were playing Metallica and Pantera, but not, I've never heard Lamb of God on the radio. Not on, like on terrestrial radio, not on Sirius, but on terrestrial radio. I don't think I've ever heard a band like Lamb of God. You wouldn't have heard somebody like Madball back in the day or anything like that from the hardcore side.
Well, they were wedged right in between that like NSYNC, you know, boy band pop era and then the rap era.
Yeah.
So there's just like a little wedge of hardcore metal post-hardcore.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it was good for not only the bands at that time to get that exposure on radio, but it's also was great for fans, because it's anybody that's a big fan of metal knows that without the internet and like Reddit and other groups, and there used to be just websites back in the day, and then Headbangers Ball and MTV, it was notoriously difficult to find new metal bands.
And I wanted to go into this, and I wish I had more time, because their band broke off MySpace. Well, it wasn't his band originally. He came on, you know, a little bit later, but that Mice and Men broke off MySpace with like a million plays.
Like in 2008 or some shit before he came on. Yeah, it was... Mm-hmm. And that happened a lot. I mean, there weren't a lot of avenues before MySpace, social media, and these other things until, I guess it was around...
Well, MySpace kind of was the social media for, like, rock
for music. I mean, that's what they should have stayed with. They should have
tried
only
to repivot
bands.
Later,
yeah.
But didn't
they really. Should have only... If they had just stayed as the music social media, they would still exist today.
Well, you could put a band song as, like, your homepage. Like, people would just go to your MySpace profile and, like, the band song is just playing.
Yeah.
So, like.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sam Mesadra says in the chat here, MySpace is what sent metalcore to the moon. You might be right about that. I mean, but they did come around. These metalcore bands, for the most part, came around during the perfect storm, the confluence of getting radio time, having social media and stuff like that. I mean, I wonder what the really great, like Madball, for example, probably wouldn't play, the style of music wouldn't play with this younger generation, but let's just say a band of that talent that had that kind of cult following would have been motherfucking massive. I mean, they would have...
Because we have social media on
huge.
Our phones now. Yeah. They only had social media on computers.
Yeah, that was... They were big. Kind of the difference. They were big like 94 to 98, really. That was their prime time, but they were throwing... They were doing wild shit. So if YouTube had existed back then, they were throwing like saw blades out into the crowd and shit. It wasn't like... It was like a very violent version of a god damn it, what's the name of the band from Virginia? Gwar.
Gwar, yeah.
They were like a very violent version of Gwar. By the way, Gwar band from Virginia playing as Gwar.
Right.
So they have another band that they play as without the costumes and shit.
Hilarious.
While they're in Virginia. I went to a Gwar concert one time and they had a giant paper mache dick on stage. And then at some of the breakdowns in the music, like the hardcore breakdowns, the giant paper mache dick would spray white foam into the audience. And I was all the way in the back because, you know, I don't like to be in crowds and stuff. I'm all the way in the back looking. I'm like, this is really fucking funny. This is really funny. I enjoy this very much.
Yeah, they were mostly the Spectral. I feel like you go to one GWAR show, you've been to them all.
Yeah, you don't need to see them twice.
There was a band, I guess it was a band, it was like an electronic hardcore band called Porn and Chicken out of Chicago. Oh, so yeah, where the girls would come out in their dancing suits and grind their pussies with the metal plate and shoot the sparks.
Yes. Yeah. Very bizarre. I also liked Green Jelly, who started out as Green Jello, but Jello sued them to change the name. They did like Little Pig, Let Me In.
Remember?
They just turned nursery rhymes into. But there were some of them were like, there's one whole song about the dude's got to take a shit. stuff like that they would definitely play now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? With social media. So I always wonder what it would have looked like.
Well, a lot of this band, a lot of this scene, a lot of this time period, it was all about the feeling and the doing. And that's what I really wanted to get into and talk about a little bit more. Because, like, you could literally tour in Central California and be a rock star almost out of nowhere.
Without ever leaving the area, too, yeah.
I mean, I made a band with my friends, and now we're playing 4 or 5 shows a week all around California. And it's like we're still wearing basketball shorts and living with our parents.
I mean, in the 90s, hardcore in New York was like that, in the city at least. I mean... if you were a metal fan in New York, and it was around the time when all those old industrial buildings, the brick buildings, started getting turned into venues and restaurants and shit, like bars and restaurants and shit like that. But Madball is the best example of it. But they were fucking huge in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, just the Northeast in general. Nobody else on earth knew who they were unless you were in a hardcore band. You know what I mean? Like they were like the hardcore band.
But it was almost so like perfect in that aspect. Like you had your community, you had like you had enough to facilitate an entire life around it.
Yeah.
And you know, does it get better than that? Do you need the super notoriety? Do you need the mega stardom?
Like, if you want money, right?
I mean, what's really money though? Money is just taking care of life. Like you can live a good life as Madball, walking into every single deli, never being able to pay for anything.
I suppose, although those days are gone now.
I wish, I reminisce.
What is that?
I don't know. What's going on?
I don't know. Somebody asked if you had ever seen, was it Hailstorm in concert?
Mm.
I don't remember.
No.
Yeah, Hailstorm. God damn it, I can't say words. That was Jacob Nickel. Hatebreed, Hatebreed was big. They're actually, Jamie from Hatebreed was just on the new album that Lamb of God put out in 2020 with Memento Mori and all that shit on it. He does a song on there. I think Chino from whatever the fuck is on a song. They did a lot of stuff, but they recorded it all remotely.
Mm-hmm.
And they put, I think I've said this on the show before, maybe I said it on that combat playlist show on Patreon. So if you want to watch, if you want to hear my combat playlist, by the way, you got to go sign up on Patreon. It'll be published sometime this week, I imagine.
We'll drop it right after this. I'll go drop it right after we're done with the show.
Yeah, and but Lamb of God recorded this album, and then they recorded it all individually from their homes, and then they did like music videos basically, but it's just them playing in their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on their Facebook watch page. So if you want to go check that out, not that I would ever promote fucking Facebook after they dicked us over last week.
We'll get together and do a show on that too.
Yeah.
To get everyone updated on what's going on Facebook.
But, that was super cool. Yeah. We're going to do a show on Facebook.
Internet censorship and the state of the internet right now. I mean, we have companies.
Yeah. We have, Freddie Wong on tomorrow from Rocket Jump. For those of you who remember, he's been on the show a number of times before. He's a very good digital content creator. Very funny. He's been on Key and Peele. He's done all kinds of crazy shit, but
he's a member of Corridor Crew. Yeah, if you're looking at Tactical Reload, that's a great video he does.
Yeah, he's very, very funny and also very talented. He's one of the better editors I know, and he spends a lot of time playing video games with Eli Cuevas, who you may know. Freddie Wong is a great guy. He's going to be on tomorrow. Again, we'll release this other shit later today, and I don't want to say what we might be doing this weekend. I'm not gonna spoil it.
Don't tease that too much. That's gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
man. I'm just now reminiscing on this like post-hardcore Central California scene at that time period, and it was a bunch of these misfit loser kids who were like told they were like they didn't really fit in with the cholos, they didn't fit in with like the white suburban people of California, and there were finally these answers for them. And surprisingly enough, a lot of them were Christian. Oddly, a lot of these were Christian bands.
What's the band? August Burns Red.
August Burns Red. Under Oath.
Probably the biggest one, but Under Oath. I guess Under Oath in the metalcore scene, but August Burns Red more hardcore style.
So it'd be these like it's like youth days at churches, and they're just playing hardcore, savage metalcore music, which like didn't go together at the time because there was still this like anti-rock movement left over from like the 60s and 70s. It was like, this is the devil.
I actually remember one of my dad's friends said this to me one time. He goes, well, if there's such a thing as Christian metal, then there's got to be Christian drugs and Christian pornography too, right? I'm like, I'm sorry. So your premise is that a certain style of music is intrinsically evil, like from the devil? What's the basis of that? He goes, you don't hear churches doing that? I'm like, oh my God, dude. Churches don't play football either, motherfucker.
But little did he know that there was Christian drugs and there was Christian pornography.
Yeah, the Christian drugs was Black Beauties, basically Adderall before Adderall existed, and all the housewives were on it, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, and I'm on it too, so fuck you.
If it like works, don't stop it.
I'm not going to stop. I can't stop, and I won't.
Bad Boys for Life.
Speaking of that impression, I got to tell you, man, Womb Raider, yes, In Flames is amazing live. They are not only are they great live, but they play all of their hits every single time. That's what you love in a band. You don't want to fucking come out and see your favorite band play a bunch of new songs that you don't know. You want to hear those songs, but I want to hear the good songs too. Anyways, I don't think Dave Chappelle is funny anymore.
He's pretty very preachy now.
Yeah, I have no time for that. Like, I've got offered twice now in the last 3 weeks free tickets to go see him perform. I'm like, nah, I'm good, man. And it's very disappointing. It's almost that path that George Carlin took and a couple of his HBO specials, where there's some comedy mixed in, but it's mostly him just like old man screaming at people. And while he made some very good points there, and while Dave Chappelle made some good points in his last couple of videos, it's really just, man, it's exhausting. I go to this comedy show because I want to hear you. You know, I want to hear your insight, but I also want to fucking hear jokes. I want to hear jokes because it's a comedy show. Like, if I wanted to go see Deaf Poetry, I would have went and seen that motherfucker. And I feel like he is circling the drain right now, and people are going to start, like, just tuning out of it. It's not that people don't like... I don't think anybody really dislikes him so much. People are just going to tune the fuck out. Also, that last video he posted, he called himself a hero.
For standing up to comedy.
No. He called himself a hero. Well, that was part of it for sure. Yeah, but he was like, he. This premise was that, you can always tell when cowards will try to tear down heroes. Like, I asked Comedy Central for this, and then I got COVID. And people said, it was about COVID. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how, the people who told him to stay at home and avoid touring were cowards, and that he was a hero for going to do shows. Dave, you're not a fucking hero, brother. You're a comedian.
I would give him a leader. I'd give him a leader at that. I'd give him a trendsetter. He was doing things in Ohio during a time in which no one else was doing.
So yeah, for sure.
That's not hero work.
No. But I mean, if he's a hero, then so is fucking Dana White, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
But he's not a hero. He's a fucking Dana. Dana figured out, just like Dave figured out, that people need this. Right?
They do.
Which, and that's certainly a leadership thing to do. But this whole thing coming out and trying to compare all the people who were upset about Kaepernick kneeling during the anthem at football games and the 200 people that stormed the Capitol. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's trying to compare millions of Americans who are deeply offended by this. And I'm personally not. I don't really give a shit if somebody kneels for the anthem or not. But millions of people are. Millions of people associate that act with disrespect. And then he tried to compare them on a one-for-one with 200 retards that are domestic terrorists. That fucking either-or type of mentality is poison bullshit.
Yeah.
And it is the fundamental root of almost all of our problems in society right now, and everybody thought he was above it, but he's not. He's just as self-centered and egotistical as everybody else, so much so that he called himself a fucking hero on stage in front of other human beings. That is pathetic. It is fucking pathetic. If anybody ever refers to themselves as a hero, they're not, regardless of what they've done. Jesus.
I agree with that.
The reason I'm ranting on this is because I'm very disappointed in that.
Yes, right because now. We expected more from him.
Yeah, I really
But at
did.
The same time, do we not also give him like the ability to be little? Like, we're all human in some
sport.
Yeah,
no,
like,
I mean,
we all get to be selfish at times. We all get to be petty.
For sure, yeah. I'm not saying that I dislike him personally now. I'm not saying that I won't listen to his jokes in the future. If he starts saying funny shit again, I'll be the first person there to listen, frankly. And to his credit, later on in his little monologue there, he directed all the credit back into the fan base. Like, hey, I did this and I did this, but if it weren't for you guys coming out and supporting me and watching, stopping watching my old show to give me back the power, all this stuff, then I wouldn't have been able to do this at all. So he did bring everybody into his self-worship, I guess.
Yeah.
But the fact that he called himself a
hero. I'm only
a hero
because you guys made me a hero.
Right, but that is just really, truly pathetic. So everything is redeemable unless it's pedophilia, in my eyes, right? As long as you're not fucking kids, you can fuck up all the time, and I'll pretty much forget about it in 15 minutes, to be honest. Like, we're in such a short life cycle sociologically now. You can't afford to hold grudges.
No.
It's just, I mean, you shouldn't anyways because it's poison for your own brain, but, man, you can't, you certainly, you have to, I say this on the show all the time. I've been seeing it since all this cancel culture bullshit started. If we're, for two things. One, if you're going to tear somebody up when they fuck up, when they make amends for it, you have to be willing to accept that apology as well, right? You have to be able to redeem people. And you have to support people who do the right thing as much as you hate on people who do the wrong thing. And that applies to the same person, right? So if somebody's doing the wrong thing and you're tearing them up, as soon as they start doing the right thing, you have to praise that because it's not about them. It's about the action and what it's contributing to society, right?
So with that being said, I agree with Dave. I do think he is a hero. I don't think it's for what he did during COVID. I think it's what he did during earlier in his career. I think it's the wrecking ball that he was.
Yeah, he's a hero to comedians.
I think he's a hero to
and media in general. Media, people who are producing content, I guess.
I'm going to take a step further. I think society, like when Chappelle's show came out and he leaned into some of those stereotypes and held a mirror up to some of those stereotypes to kind of depower them in a way.
Yeah.
I think no one else was doing it. Everything was tiptoeing around it. Everyone else wanted to like hush it away or sweep it under the rug. And he pulled it out in the front of everyone and said, these stereotypes are ridiculous and they're stupid and I'm going to make fun of them. And the fact that every person of every race is laughing with me shows that.
Yeah.
And I think that some of those actions were heroic in a way. He was heroic in his art or successful in his art.
He definitely put himself out
way.
There. Yeah. I mean, he put himself out there and he paid the price for it. When I say he paid the price, I mean, and I know this from one of my buddies is a black firefighter in a predominantly white jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And he was coming up through the department as a young firefighter around the time that show was super popular. So what he experienced, and this is really interesting to hear, there's a saying, talk like you're right, but listen like you're wrong, right? So speak from a position of authority, but listen like you have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. So you can learn that way. But you don't want to second guess what you're saying, because if you do, you're going to fucking pull your punches and nobody's going to get the actual truth there.
And then it doesn't inspire confidence either.
Correct. So you need to be able to listen to other people's experience and take it for exactly what they're saying it is. Be gracious about it and don't assume one thing or another about them. Like, oh, you're just weak for thinking that. That's fucking stupid. You know what I mean? Because the human brain is what it is, and it works the way it works. At any rate, this guy came up during a time when this is coming up, and his experience was that, yeah, he loved Dave Chappelle. He thought he was hilarious because he was, and he is still. Unearth is great, by the way, Davey Jacobson. And they're on my combat playlist. You'll hear that later today. He came up during that time. His experience was that it made casual racist jokes from white dudes in his department that he knew to be a little bit problematic, very acceptable, right? And I think Dave ran into a lot of that too, and he talks about it. He never mentioned it on the race part. I think he intentionally avoided that, but he did make the point when he was talking about the Rick James impression, because people would come up to him in public and just say, I'm Rick James, bitch. It's like his two children are right there. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I think he intentionally avoided that. It's because he didn't want to make it about race,
right?
But there was a price to pay, is all I'm saying.
He brings up the race thing in his Mark Twain Award acceptance speech.
Yeah.
So he brings it up, especially lack of better phrasing or words, it doesn't matter, or it's okay, or he did it anyway for comedy. And he even respected the comedians or the people that he came up with or the people that wrote who were racist and hid their racism within good comedy in a way, but like still knew that was there almost in a way that like comedy, like free speech, you have to accept the bad with the good to have the pure art form or have the art form have the ability that it does to express something to people, which, you know, I think that Dave did during that time period, and then leaving when he also did leave did so much more now. Like, we're learning about these problems with Hollywood now. We're learning about all these things now. You know, how much more are we going to learn in 10, 15 more years?
Yeah.
Reasons why he did, but.
Well, we'll see. All right, so we're going to get out of here. Tomorrow, again, we have Freddie Wong coming on. We'll be going live tomorrow at noon Central with American Party, me and Dakota. And we will we'll see you then.
Yeah, all these bands that you guys are dropping, Between the Buried and Me and everything, all of these are on Dan's War playlist.
Yeah.
I will literally, as soon as we're off this, just go publish it so you guys can just go jump right over there. All right, everybody. I've been Giorgio. This is Dan. We are the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.